Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Will Pruitt, and I am here to guide you through an audio review of the TNA Impact Wrestling episode from December 6, 2012. Ladies and gentlemen, we're about 15 days away from the world ending. How exciting is that? I mean, the world's going to end, and it's not going to be because Chris Jericho did some mysterious thing at the Royal Rumble. That was cool, right? That time he did that, that didn't make anyone upset when he didn't win the Rumble and nothing really happened. Yeah. So, let's get into this show real quick. I'll do the shilling a little bit later, but to kick things off, I actually really want to talk about kind of an ongoing issue I have in TNA. And I brought this up a lot in my Pruitt's Pause article available on ProWrestling.net today. Hey, there's a little shilling right off the top. But I want to talk about it. There's an error at the very core of storytelling in TNA right now, and it's so basic and so far below kind of the level that you expect things to be screwed up at in a wrestling company or in any sort of storytelling genre that it's really surprising. And I think it's possible that it's almost going, with the creative forces in TNA being what they are, that it's almost going beyond what they look for when they're making sure that their stories are doing X, Y, and Z. The error that I'm noticing so often is in characters and their motivations. It's like no one in TNA, when they book something, when they have a character do something, is going, well, why would they do that? With Hulk Hogan, no one's going, why does he not want to book Austin Aries and Bully Ray? What's the reasoning behind him not wanting to do this? When Hulk says no, why is he saying no? And Hulk himself isn't saying, I'm saying no because of this. And it's a real problem. And we're seeing it up and down the card. Jawbreaker in the .NET members forum brought this issue up about Aces and Eights. Why are the Aces and Eights in TNA? What are they trying to accomplish? What is their mission statement, their goal? Why is this biker gang that has existed for pert near 20 years, apparently, suddenly attacking wrestlers? What made them do that? Why, and it's just finding logical reasons for events to occur. And at that core, TNA is not doing a good job. And it's frustrating because when that's not there, the whole show falls apart. The core of a wrestling show is in its characters. The entire idea of a wrestling show is the character. Plots come and go. Characters themselves stay. Yes, they change. They're dynamic. They move. But the guiding principles of characters a lot of times stay the same for a long period of time. And it takes a significant event to change that guiding principle. So what's happening in TNA that is causing some wrestlers to change their guiding principles and join Aces and Eights? And B, what is the appeal of the Aces and Eights to these wrestlers? What is making these wrestlers say, I need to be a part of Aces and Eights because? What is Aces and Eights trying to do? There isn't a mission. They aren't trying to invade. They're not trying to take over. They're not, to run the show. What is their objective? A character without an objective is lost. And right now, I feel like TNA is lost. And it's because they aren't finding objectives for their characters. Even the simplest ones, Bobby Roode's objective right now is to win the world championship and get back his former glory. That's what Bobby Roode wants. Awesome. That's great. What does Jeff Hardy want to do? He wants to defeat Bobby Roode and prove that he deserves to be world champion and defend his world title. That's great. Those are basic motivations. But when you come at a character with that core figured out, with that motivation figured out, with what their guiding principle, their objective, what they will do, and the means to which they'll do it figured out, suddenly wrestling makes a lot more sense. Suddenly everything else happening works. But without that, without that guiding principle, without those things that characters are trying to do, it's really difficult to make the wrestling portion of things make sense. Hulk Hogan right now seems to not have a guiding principle. He doesn't have an objective defining his actions. You know, Austin Aries does. It's to create chaos and drive a rift between Brooke Hogan and her father for whatever reason, and using the relationship with Bully Ray to do that. Bully Ray does. His guiding principle right now is to defend the honor of his almost kind of maybe girlfriend by against the heinous attacks by Austin Aries. What's Hulk Hogan's besides to defend his daughter? How does that match up with his actions? That's an error at the very core of storytelling, at the very core of what wrestling is based on, because it's an error in the consistency of characters. And if the characters aren't there, the plot doesn't make sense. If the plot's not there, the actions the wrestlers take don't make sense, and really, the matches don't make sense. So now you've got wrestling happening, but nothing about it is actually appealing. I believe that TNA is making errors that are so basic that they're overlooking it. And I'm not saying that storytelling's easy. I'm not saying that I would do it better if I were in charge. There might be circumstances that are forcing this to happen. Please don't think that I'm saying I'm better than TNA at everything because I see this. I can see this because I'm an outside observer, because I'm someone sitting here watching it on TV and just asking the question of why and not able to come up with answers. I don't think I'm better than anyone in TNA at telling stories, but I do think that I have the perspective to be able to say, you're telling this story in a poor way and here is why. And, you know, I hope if anyone in TNA listens to this, if anyone that knows anyone in TNA happens to hear this, that that gets communicated and that this issue gets fixed. That maybe even, it wouldn't shock me if they saw it and went, you know, we have these necessities, you know, we have these inconsistent necessities that we have to take on because down the road X, Y, and Z is going to happen and we're setting that up right now. I want to have that kind of faith in TNA and really... You know, and I could look at a WWE show and pick it apart, but let's just talk about invading factions right now. The Shield came into WWE and within 2 weeks had a stated goal and a purpose. They had something that they believed at their core that they're fighting for. Now, does that match up with their actions? That's for you to decide. You know, they have a noble goal, but does that noble, are they acting in a noble way? No, that's what makes them heels. But they have that goal that they believe in. What does Aces and Eights believe in? What are the Aces and Eights trying to do? Well, I feel like the last real development in the Aces and Eights story happened in August. That's when matches against Aces and Eights started happening. And since then, they've all pretty much ended the same way with the rest of Aces and Eights running in and causing a disqualification. There's a serious gap in storytelling that is really frustrating to me. And... You know, I'm trying to give TNA the benefit of the doubt. I get burnout on wrestling. I think we all get burnout on wrestling sometimes because it is, you know, I am watching a 3-hour Raw every week. Sometimes I watch SmackDown. I'm definitely watching Main Event. I've got a stack of indie DVDs to review that I'm trying to work in. And honestly, sometimes I like watching wrestling for pleasure. So I'll pop in a DVD with an old Main Event that I love. This week, you know, I watched the Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels ladder match from No Mercy 2008. And I have no regrets about watching that. But it's difficult to get motivated for another wrestling show sometimes. And last night as I watched TNA, I tried to say, what would happen if this were the only 2 hours of wrestling I were watching this week? How would I feel about it? I didn't want to approach it from a burnout point of view, because that's really easy to do sometimes, and it's not fair to TNA as a promotion. It's not fair to the men and women that work hard on this product. And I don't think I know everything. I don't think I know more than the people who have lived their whole lives in wrestling and know wrestling so well. But I do believe that I can diagnose things. You know, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think that I made at least mildly valid points. But, you know, that's just kind of my main pet peeve, and the main thing coming out of Impact is I had to step back, you know, sit down and go, there's something at the core wrong with this show. What is it, and why is it happening, and why is it as frustrating as it is? And it's just been a difficult thing for me to figure out. So let's get into the to the shilling part, and then I'll go through the show kind of segment by segment. If you enjoy wrestling news and wrestling audio content, which you do because you're listening to this, check out ProWrestling.net and especially our members section. On our members section, you get an audio review of every TV show of Raw, SmackDown, and Impact, the three biggies. You also get an audio review of pay-per-views. Those are member exclusive. No one else gets to listen to those. Those are for our members. And it's an audio review of the TNA pay-per-views normally with Jason Powell and the WWE shows normally with Jason Powell and Chris Shore sitting down and talking about them. On top of that, we have weekly shows that we do. .NET Weekly, the flagship, Jason Powell and Chris Shore, oftentimes breaking first-run news on that show and oftentimes offering some unique analysis of the news that's happening, dropping some hints of things they may have heard but cannot repeat. That's always a fun show to listen to and one that, you know, is well worth your time every week. The .NET Countdown show with myself and Jake Barnett talking about just the best and worst moments in wrestling that week, whether it's on a storytelling standpoint, we rarely get into news. We're more just reviewing the shows and talking about what we liked and didn't like and why. And that show always has its own little dose of nonsense as well. And I like talking to Jake every week. So, you know, there's that. We also have the .NET Q&A show with Jason Powell answering member questions. That's another show where Jason takes questions from the members. Oftentimes will take those questions to his sources inside of companies and say, hey, what have you heard about this? Hey, I have a member that wants to know about this. What do you know? And your question is actually being answered by someone within these wrestling companies, which is pretty cool. I think that's one of the coolest features of membership. On top of that, you get interviews. We have an all-access interview for you right now with a WWE 13 game designer. You also get member-exclusive interviews. Recently, we've had an interview with Court Bauer. We have interviews with a ton of former WWE creative team members. Seth Mates talks about WrestleMania with us every year. On and on. Wrestlers, you've got Shane Hurricane Helms, Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar. Our archives are extensive, and it's a really cool dynamic in the interviews with some people that just want to talk wrestling. I don't think we get a lot of overly bitter folk on the site, and I think you can learn a lot from just our backlog of interviews. All of that is available to our members, as well as ad-free access to the site, access to the all-new and improved .NET members forum, and, you know, just the entire package and member first-run news, which there was quite a bit of this week, especially about the CM Punk injury situation. And, .NET members got the first word on how serious that was, how people backstage were responding to it, and what the expectations were for Punk as we went into and came out of surgery. So all of that, ProWrestling.net. Right now, the monthly rate, if you just want to try it for a month, see if you're into it, $7.50. Boom, right there. Great value as it is. One of the better values in wrestling website membership if you're into that kind of thing. If you've tried it maybe, or you're just sold and you want to try it for a full year, or, you know, lock yourself in, we go as low as $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. You pay it all up front, you're locked in. It's a great, it's a great way to treat yourself around Christmas, as Tom Haverford might say. So treat yourself to some ProWrestling.net, get you some of that goodness. Let's launch into Impact now. I will be kind of reading and following along with Chris Shore's Impact Wrestling live coverage from last night. If you want to follow along with me, go on over to ProWrestling.net. It's the right now it's the third thing down in the kind of member in the must-read listing. So we got the previously on Impact segment. Pyro, Mike Tenay, Taz, and Todd Kennelly checked in, and they were fine tonight. There wasn't anything really wrong with them. I didn't really notice them that much. Watching the show, I didn't pay a ton of attention to the commentary. And to open the show, we got Bobby Roode, Christopher Daniels, and Kazarian coming out. Chris Shore in his report said, Roode, Daniels, and Roode. That'd be awesome. If there were just two Bobby Roodes with Daniels, he's like, hey, whatevs. But Kazarian took the mic and started putting them over as, you know, the best part of Fortune and how they're the fans are lucky to see a reunion of them tonight, which I thought was nice. I like that they referenced, because, you know, kind of that part of the card right now is Fortune and Jeff Hardy, and I like that TNA is referencing that. I don't know if it's just because those guys love working together or what it is, but there is an awful lot of Fortune happening in TNA right now. Roode then said he was going to beat Jeff Hardy because he invested in himself and the title. He said it pays to be Roode, kind of taking that old catchphrase that he used in his kind of first singles run, if you remember his feud with Booker T back in the day. That's really all I remember from that singles run before they formed Beer Money. But he continues to use the "It Pays to Be Rude" line on occasion, and it's not a bad line. It's, you know, it reckons back to the old school at times, but it works. Daniel said he wanted to talk about AJ Styles and called him out for a little blah, 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 as he said. AJ Styles came out, said he knew what Daniels was going to say, and they basically just had a back-and-forth exchange about their last match that's going to happen at Final Resolution. AJ Styles is doing something strange with his hair. I think he's grown it out a bit, using a little less product, dyed it a little darker. It just looks a little odd to me. I don't know what it is. He kind of looks like he's wearing a wig now, which is weird because AJ Styles isn't really old enough to be losing his hair, I don't think, but... Styles said on his bet on Daniel's best day and Styles worst, Daniel's couldn't beat him. And you know, Daniel's then said, we're all figuring out that you're a loser. Styles says the problem is that Daniel's talked too much and tackled him. Daniel's partners then attacked AJ until Jeff Hardy and James Storm ran out to make the save. Basically just a segment there to promote the main event later in the night, the six-man between these guys. It was fine, you know, they hyped, oh, it's gonna go down tonight, a huge six-man, and that was it. After that, we got a video package with Austin Aries, and talking about a situation with Brooke Hogan, and, you know, Austin Aries basically said, this is all about getting revenge on Hogan. He wanted the X Division title so he could ride that into getting a world title shot again and get his belt back. Hey guys, that's how you do it. That's a character with a core motivation explaining their actions and explaining why they're doing what they're doing. Why doesn't everyone do that? Sorry, I just had to point it out. Because it's that simple. And he talked about how he was so close to getting it, but Bully Ray prevented it and said he wanted a match with Bully at the pay-per-view. And he said, Hogan better make the match or he will keep pushing his buttons. Darn right. Samoa Joe is headed for the ring for the next match, and it was Samoa Joe versus D-Von for the TNA Television Championship. This was basic. I really don't enjoy D-Von matches. I know I've said that multiple times, but this was another bad match featuring D-Von. It's not Samoa Joe, who's been having some pretty good matches as the television champion. No, I'm pretty sure it's D-Von, and D-Von ended up defeating Samoa Joe for the TV championship as some scantily clad women came up and started dancing on the ring apron, and Earl Hebner, being the smart referee that he is, seriously, guys, I just want the Hebners to stop reffing. I don't want to put anyone out of a job, but Earl Hebner already has a second job selling t-shirts out of his trunk, so he'll be fine. Yes, it's a vendetta. Get over it. But Hebner, being the fantastic official that he is throughout history, turned and tried to get the woman off the apron instead of watching the competitors in the ring, also being the horny old man that he is. And Doc came from the crowd, or the Aces and Eights weird entryway that I don't understand why it exists, and hit Samoa Joe with the hammer. D-Von covered Joe. Earl Hebner turned around to see it, counted the pinfall. D-Von won back the TNA Television Championship, despite the fact that I'm not sure if Aces and Eights wrestlers are TNA contracted talent and therefore could hold TNA championships. I think we're ignoring that. So D-Von defeated Samoa Joe for the TV championship, and D-Von, Doc, and the strippers celebrated at ringside. Again, what do Aces and Eights want? Is it championships? Are they trying to take over TNA by winning championships? Because if that is, cut a promo saying that. Have them actually state that. Is it just to create chaos in TNA? Because that's a weak goal. That's a goal that doesn't make much sense, and they've already done that. Is it just to hit people with hammers on occasion? Because you could do that at your local hardware store. Also, I'd like for TNA to explain, are Aces and Eights contracted talent? If they're not, why are they allowed to compete in matches? I know they have unlimited access to the building, but does that fans have access to the building too? Does that mean that any fan could get up and hit a wrestler with a hammer and have it be okay? You don't see, I know wrestling is different. Like, I'm well aware of that. You don't see run-ins in real sports. So what if there was a UFC match and one of, I don't know fighters, guys. I don't watch MMA because it's boring. But what if, you know, one of the fighters' cornermen jumped up and just, like, punched him in the face from the corner when the ref was checking on the other guy, and the other guy came up and was able to knock him out after that? Is that okay? I don't think it is, as interesting as it would be. It would make UFC less boring. Brooke Hogan was talking on the phone, said, "I'm glad the contracts are done, and I'll see you later." And I think this is the point in the show that they showed an Al Snow backstage segment as well, where this was weird. Yeah, it is. We went to commercial and we came back, and there was an Al Snow segment. This is not in Chris Shore's live coverage, because live coverage is hard, which is why I don't do it. But Al Snow was talking to D'Lo Brown and was like, "Dude, I mean, I remember being here on Wednesday night, going out to the bar. Then I woke up in a strange room and there were people there and I was scared." And I'm like, dude, Al Snow was date raped by aces and eights. What? The H word. Why is a character on a wrestling show being date raped? That's number one. Like, that's the first issue that I have with this. Al Snow was date raped, dude. Like, it's not Al Snow was like... But it's not just that happened. That's an actual illegal action. It's a line that wrestling shouldn't cross. Wrestling characters should not be roofied. Like, there's a certain point where you go, well, why don't you just call the cops? Like, well, and that's one of the things with the Aces and Eights situation. Same thing, Joseph Park was kidnapped for a month. Why don't you call the cops at a certain point? These guys are breaking into the impact zone and hitting people with things. We're just going to let the wrestlers handle this one. Could you imagine if that was my workplace? If people were breaking in I work for a symphony as a stage manager. If people were breaking in backstage and hitting our cellists with hammers, I'm going to let the musicians handle it, guys. That's chill. No. Why does wrestling get a pass on this? And you know what? I'll take it one step further with The Shield in WWE, because I want to be fair. Are The Shield contracted talents? I know they're in NXT, but are they... And maybe they'll answer that this week with the... or maybe that's what will be on the line in the ladder matches. The Shield's in the TLC match. Is The Shield's actual WWE contracts? But someone should answer that. If you want to take things to this level, why aren't these questions being answered? And it's a... You know, wrestling... When I watch a movie... Okay, I buy into the world of the movie. When I watch Star Wars, I buy into the existence of the Millennium Falcon. I buy into it in real life, too, but that's another issue. Well, so when I watch wrestling, I want to be able to buy into things. I want to be able to say, I believe that this can happen on this TV show in the universe that they have created. And TNA does not allow that at times. So WWE doesn't allow it at times. Wrestling itself is a broken story. It's a broken storytelling format that needs to be taken back and really thought about. And it's these core things. It's what guides the characters down deep that needs to be thought about. And, you know, a wrestling creative team, these people that are hired to tell stories in this way, they should, for each wrestler, it should be, you take a 3x5 card, or, you know, you take something, picture of the wrestler on one side with their name, other side it says what guides their actions, what motivates them, why they do what they do. And that can change. You can cross it off and write something new on that little trading card. But that should be the core of the wrestler, and it shouldn't be complicated. It shouldn't, and their objectives shouldn't be to gain power and control. It should be what guides this wrestler. And tell tightly constructed stories based on what you write on those cards. I don't know. Guys, am I asking too much? Like, am I expecting too much out of wrestling at a certain point because I want stories to be consistently told? Because at times I feel like I am, and at other times I go, no, wrestling is theater. When I go see a show, when I go and spend my money to see theater, I expect that the actors and the characters have motivations that will guide them through this show. Yes, they can change. Yes, their tactics may change. Yes, why they do what they do might change, but it's always going to be there and be present. And that because of that, characters are going to make sense. am I just thinking of wrestling as too high of an art form? Is that the issue here? That I expect wrestling to be artistically produced and not slapped together? I don't know. I'm bitter today, guys. That's not on purpose. I can promise you that. I'm just frustrated. You know, wrestling can be something great. Wrestling at its best can be a storytelling format that excites you and makes you feel things and brings you catharsis in a way that other storytelling formats can't. But it can also be an immensely frustrating experience to watch it when you know what it's capable of and you are let down so, you know, and you see it letting you down so often. I love wrestling. I love wrestling as a storytelling format. I love what wrestling is, and I love to sit down and watch it. I love to get engaged with it, and like I said, I love to buy into it. And I'm not saying that I don't ignore some storytelling flaws, but there comes a certain moment where it's hard to do that. So yeah, Al Snow was date raped. Mickey James came out and thanked everyone for their support through the health scare we knew nothing about, and said she made a promise, and on Sunday she's going to keep that promise. She's going to be Knockouts champion. Tara and Jesse then cut her off. Tara called her Missy and said there was no way she was going to win the title. She started to say more, but all of a sudden, Velvet Sky's music hit the ring, and we broke on ProWrestling.net first, .net member exclusive at first, that Velvet Sky was going to be returning on this show. She did so. Boom. Chalk it up to our news-breaking operations that I have nothing to do with. Velvet Sky came to the ring, and Taz just perved the hell out and went, "Oh my god, let the pigeons loose! Look at how good she looks! I love lady parts!" Dude, Taz, watch some porn. Don't subject us all to you, like, getting off in the middle of commentating. And I'm not excited about the Velvet Sky return. I know a lot of people are. .NET member Ernesto Cruz is psyched. I'm not a Velvet Sky fan. I don't think she's a good wrestler, and that bugs me. And I also don't believe that she is, you know, she's not that great on the mic, and it bothers me that the commentators, and this bugs me when I watch Attitude Era footage, Jerry Lawler being a total perv. It's gross. Like, it's thunder gross. It really kind of grosses me out the way it goes, and it's something that bothers me. You know, it's a pet peeve about wrestling that the commentators get to be your horny uncle sitting in the room going, "Man, I'd sure like to put it in her." I don't want to watch that. But Velvet Sky basically thanked Brooke for bringing her back, wished them both luck this Sunday, and said, "I'm going to be Knockouts champ in 2013. And Chris Jordan made a great point. Most effective way to take heat off of a match? Look down the road to the next match. Really bad timing here with bringing Velvet back the way that they did. That segment happened. Let's move on. The Robbies were in the ring, and the tag team champions Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez came out next, and I wondered to myself, is every tag team that is not Kazarian and Daniels in TNA a big man, little man tag team combination? With Robbie E and Robbie T, Chavo and Hernandez, and Joey Ryan and Matt Morgan. And I determined at that point that yes, every tag team in TNA is a big man, little man combination. Way to work the formula, TNA. Robbie E and Robbie T versus Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. This was basically a squash for the tag champs. Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez beating Robbie E and Robbie T in 3 minutes and 52 seconds. They won with Chavo hitting the frog splash and getting heat off of my friend and yours, Eddie Guerrero. It's just what Chavo does. It's not, you know, there's nothing really to say about it. And I'm sorry for those of you who are hearing the leaf blower apocalypse happening outside of my house right now. Way to go, landscaping. Post-match, Joey Ryan made his entrance and, you know, basically just talking trash, saying, you know, "We're going to beat you on Sunday." Matt Morgan slid into the ring and took Hernandez and Chavo out with clotheslines to the back of the head. Then Ryan said, you know, "Matt Morgan's the big man, and I've got the big member," or something like that. Basically, Joey Ryan is complimenting the size of his man parts. That's what you need to know. The strippers dance around poles as a celebration in the Aces and Eights clubhouse, and D-Von and the others sat around with women in their lap. He told Doc to relax because he got his title back, and that's what matters, and Doc would handle Kurt Angle later. said they needed to throw a dart, and the VP, Bane, cut him off and said someone paid for a hit, pulled out a sack of money in an envelope and said, "Money talks, bullshit walks, and we will be doing a lot of talking tonight." Yeah, aces and eights, my friends. They're motivated by cash. We found out later in the show that it was Bobby Roode that paid for a hit. Bobby Roode that said he was in no way affiliated with Aces and Eights back in August and was attacked by them, now paying them to attack others. Again, character consistency. That's all I ask for. Basically the strippers rubbed up against each other. Good work, TNA, for just bringing trashy television to the forefront. In a really unexpected way. There's a certain trashiness to TNA that amazes me every time I see it. And it happens with, like, the camera panning up at Chrissy Hemme. It happens with Taz getting his, like, you know, getting his rocks off while Velvet Sky comes out. And it happens with segments like this where it's a... sometimes I'd really love to show my friends the great wrestling that TNA produces. Because they do. There's a certain amount of athleticism and action that you don't get from WWE that TNA produces that is exciting and fun. And, it's the type of escapist wrestling I love to watch. But then they do things like this where I'm embarrassed to say that I watch the show. Where my wife is sitting in the room and I can tell, and she knows kind of the dichotomy that is TNA. And because she watches wrestling with me on occasion and she just... And I know that she's going, my husband's not a dirtbag, but he watches TV produced exclusively for dirtbags sometimes. Okay, maybe she's saying my husband is a dirtbag. I'm not going to kayfabe you on that one. But and I use the word frustrating so often to describe TNA, but that's what TNA is at its core. It's frustrating. Video recap, D'Lo Brown saying yes to Wes Briscoe last week, and Wes and Garrett Bischoff sucked up to Kurt Angle, and Kurt Angle returned the favor to them. And he said he had Doc, and they promised to have his back. Solid hype for Angle versus Doc, throughout the show, kind of telling you that, in a way, telegraphing that match was going to be more than just those two going at it. Chavo and Hernandez and cut a promo. And said Morgan and Ryan have their attention, and they would kick them in the face Sunday instead of attacking from behind. Kind of an odd thing where the promo cut off before it was done. Kurt Angle made his entrance twice. Like, they played his music twice. It was weird. There were some production mistakes here. And they went to commercial. Doc entered from the special Aces and Eights entryway. And it was Kurt Angle versus Doc next. This one started out as a fight. And it was basically just the classic Kurt Angle match at a certain point with the technical wrestling. Angle came right back with an angle slam. He hooked the ankle lock, but Aces and Eights ran in to cause the DQ. And Aces and Eights surrounded the ring. Garrett Bischoff, Wes Briscoe, and Samoa Joe gingerly jogged out to make the save. There was a funny thing where, like, Samoa Joe is running faster than Garrett and Wes, and Garrett's like, man, I gotta get my button down off before I get to the ring. And this basically broke down into an 8-on-8 tag team match challenge with Angle, Wes, Garrett, and Samoa Joe facing D-Von, Doc, and two Aces and Eights members at the pay-per-view. Solid. Some solid stuff. I do expect this to be the turn of Garrett and Wes at the pay-per-view, and I'll get into that at the end of this when I preview the pay-per-view right quick. But I expect this to be the turn of Garrett and Wes, and everyone and their mother will go, dude, Kurt, do you even watch Impact? Interesting point that this brought up, and I didn't mention this in my Prudes Pause today, but I did mention it in the .NET member forum. There I go shilling again. In the world of social media, where wrestling characters use social media to discuss wrestling angles, Kurt Angle will sometimes tweet at a character, but just as often, Kurt Angle is tweeting in character saying, oh, D-Von, you best bring it tonight, or something like that, where Kurt's very much in the kind of Kurt Angle in the TNA world character. If I were to tweet him, dude, Kurt, check out the fluffy-haired dude and ask Wes Briscoe to take his hair down. I think you're going to see that Wes is an Aces and Eights member. If I say that to Kurt Angle on the Twitter, does that make Kurt Angle the stupidest person alive for ignoring it? Aces and Eights says who they're going to attack on the Twitter. Does that make Jeff Hardy really dumb, or the people around Jeff Hardy really dumb for not saying, hey, Jeff, you got tweeted that you're going to get your ass handed to you tonight. Have you noticed that? It's a weird thing that TNA does, or that wrestling companies themselves do, and it's bridging this gap between social media and fans being able to read ahead in stories where it used to be I could yell it from the crowd and maybe they hear me, but they probably don't, and they can definitely pretend not to hear me. But now that it's in social media and wrestlers respond to fans in social media, it's a different universe. And that's I guess that's probably a great argument for not incorporating wrestlers as characters on social media. That becomes a stumbling block as far as telling stories goes. I'm getting all, like, theory of wrestling on you guys today. That's my mood. It's just talking about the theory of professional wrestling and how it's produced. I hope that's your mood, too. Backstage, Hulk Hogan was on the phone with Joe Parks and basically told him to call out Snow in OVW instead of these other wrestling camps. That's a nice promotion for OVW. He hung up and chastised Bully Ray for not knocking before he entered the office. Bully said he wants a match with Aries, and now he's demanding it. And Hogan said he saw the bigger picture, and the answer was no. What's the bigger picture? Like, there is... Sorry, I got into it before. Hulk Hogan has no reason to deny this match other than the script said. Then Hulk says, no, you can't have the match. Bully said he bet before the end of the night the answer would be yes because he was taking over. Hogan said, be careful what you wish for. Bully left, and Hogan was like, man, someone give Bully Ray a Midol. Ha ha ha, period jokes. And what was that segment? Backstage, James Storm talked to Jeff Hardy, who had his face painted blue. And he said, you want to get rude, but I also want to get my hands on rude. And he walked off. Then we got Hardy going in his internal monologue. Again, the Jeff Hardy character may not have a guiding principle, but by golly, can I hear his thoughts in this reality-based, but not really reality-based world of TNA Impact. And Jeff Hardy's internal monologue said, everyone's words seemed fake, but when you're champions, it's just you and the monsters or the creatures or whatever. Jeff Hardy's fans have the same nickname as Lady Gaga's fans. Think about that. Said everyone, you know, seems fake to him. Guys, in TNA, I respect you for trying something new in wrestling storytelling. I do. I respect you for going, we want to do this thing that the WWE isn't brave enough to do where you hear a character's thoughts and we want to try it out. It's not working. It isn't. And it calls into question what the show is trying to be. And that's frustrating. Then we got this saying to the ring where it's just, hey, these three guys are going to fight for the X Division number one contendership right now. Kenny King, Kid Cash, and Zema Ion. I talked last week about the missed opportunity to give these guys some character development, to make Kenny King, Kid Cash, and Zema Ion have unique personalities where I supported or did not support them based on them. And they failed to do that again this week by just putting them out there, not even giving them entrances where the commentators could list off some personality traits and who they were. It was just, hey, there's these three guys, watch them go. And that's really what this match was, and it was a good match. Kenny King, Zema Ion, and Kid Cash had a nice high-flying exhibition spot fest that I was entertained by. 5 minutes and 58 seconds of them flying around the ring. So 6 minutes of these guys just leaving it out there in the ring and flying and, you know, entertaining people with a dose of athleticism that wrestling shows tend to need. I said this about Raw, when they had an 8-man tag right before Survivor Series that was, I think it was Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio and Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd versus the Primetime Players and someone else. Maybe it was the Rhodes Scholars or the Primetime, I don't know. Another tag team. Primo and Epico, that was it. And those eight guys just went out there and had a fun, high-flying, and dynamic match that got that Raw crowd on their feet and cheering. By the end of it, at a pitch that they weren't at for a lot of that show, And that's what this did, is it got the crowd excited. However, this is the impact zone, so when that crowd gets excited, they make poor choices, like chanting, "This is awesome." Particularly, there was this guy in the front row, like, jumping up and down, going, "This is awesome! This is awesome!" Like, he was just so excited to be a part of this match. And normally, I respect excitement, but he looked dumb. So I couldn't really respect it in that I just couldn't support what he was doing. But the finish came with Kenny King hitting Zion with the Royal Flush and becoming the number one contender for the X Division Championship. Now let's remember, it was Kenny King that was yelled at and rejected and jilted by Hulk Hogan last week. So is Kenny King a heel now? Because he was a babyface and kind of, you know, the babyface buddy of Austin Aries going into August. You know, he won a contract or something. Or no, he became a TNA wrestler in July and August. He was a buddy with Austin Aries. Is he still friends with him? Has he officially joined the Austin Aries heel bandwagon? Because August and September, it was just King had Aries back. I'm not sure what's going on there with that friendship. And again, these are three characters that I don't understand the guiding principles of. And it's not hard for the wrestlers to tell you what their guiding principles are. Or for the commentators to tell you, or to give these wrestlers a little bit more time. Backstage, we got Bully Ray on the phone with someone saying he's mad because Hogan's stubborn and he's going to the ring and he's going to get what he wants. And then a video, this was the second time it played this evening, teased a debut for 1/3/13. TNA, like any date that has any meaning that they may be running Impact on, they're like, let's do it. These numbers are similar. It's like 13/13. My prediction, Relic will make his return to TNA covered in blood because it says, like, the trail will be soaked in blood. Okay, so a couple years ago, I think it was 2/21/10 or something, WWE got people all excited by just promoting a date with a cabin in the rain that Undertaker would be returning. People thought it might be Cena. There was something really, really exciting happening there. And it got people talking. And it was just as simple as promoting a date. TNA did it a little bit later in the year to bring Sting back in a very similar vignette that kind of played off of the fact that WWE had gotten people excited about the possibility of Sting and then delivered The Undertaker. And they said things like, oh, this one is what you think it is. Cute idea. And then TNA promoted other dates, 10-10-10, they, you know, WWE did it last year with, you know, The End of the World and Chris Jericho, and I'm just tired of promoting dates, I guess, the big mystery of the date. It is what it is. You know, it's just me going, this has gone from fun and exciting to count down the days to it, to a trite storytelling device that doesn't excite me. Maybe I watch too much wrestling, I don't know. So a video, another recap video aired of the Hogan Aries Hogan Bully Ray story, and at this point, there had just been too much of it throughout the night, and Bully Ray made his entrance, said he's not going anywhere, he's holding the show hostage, he's going to sit in this chair in the middle of the ring. Austin Aries came out, said, I'm not going anywhere, I'm holding the show hostage, and I'm going to sit here in this chair on the entryway and not let it go on. You know, so basically both of them want a match against each other and they're going to protest until they get it. Hulk Hogan comes out and, like, the second Aries butt hits chair, Hulk Hogan's music hits, and Aries jumps up like a serial killer just popped up from behind him. Like, he is frightened, legitimately frightened. And Hogan, let me catch up to where I was. Hogan's music hit, Aries grabbed his chair, fled to the other side of the ring. Hogan got in and said he was GM and he's not going to give him the match. Why? I don't know, AIDS? I got nothing. Told Bully to get out of the ring or he would fire or beat his ass right there. Bully kicked the chair from the ring and got in Hogan's face. Brooke came out in the most unsupportive chest gear that anyone could possibly wear. And it wasn't good. Like, I'm watching it with my wife, who's reading a book while watching the show, and I rewind it, and I'm like, Christy, look at this chick's boobs, because they look awful. And we both were just like, that is not pleasant. Like, somehow that aged Brooke Hogan like 20 years, just not having the right support for her chest pieces. I'm going there, guys. I'm evaluating boobs critically. That's where I've gone in life. I'm as sad about it as you are. She called Bully Mark at a certain point, and, you know, like, oh, look, we're in a relationship, isn't this cute? I call him by his first name. And then Hogan said, if this is what everyone wanted, even though it was personal, he would make the match, brother. So, all of this build to get to that moment that wasn't that exciting. TNA makes mistakes sometimes. And again, it's, why was Hogan saying no in the first place? And then the announce team ran through the final resolution card. I will run through it at the end of this audio. Cheap plug, stay tuned to the end. Then we got our main event, Bobby Roode, Christopher Daniels, and Kazarian versus Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, and James Storm. And the moment of the night occurred when Daniels and Kazarian made their entrances wearing Zubaz and fanny packs and cut-up t-shirts and calling it Throwback Thursday. They were pink and black striped Zubaz, and my God, was it the best thing ever. For those of you who don't know, I am a Zubaz enthusiast. I'm attempting to get my wife to buy me a pair, and she will not, because she hates me. But, let's all just, talk about this real quick. Zubaz are, like, the best things. Like, for sure, the best pants probably ever made. Thank you to the Road Warriors for creating the most comfortable gym pants ever made. I need me a pair of Zubaz in my life. And this, you know, this was just, you know, they wrestled the match, seriously. Like, they weren't doing a bunch of comedy shtick in the match. This was just some fun comedy shtick beforehand. And someone on Twitter said today, I think Daniels and Kazarian are the only people having any fun in TNA. And you get the idea that they just like their act, they like what they're doing, and they like the ridiculous levels to which they're able to get stuff over. And it's fun. And this was a fun six-man tag. AJ Styles and James Storm continued their we don't get along, but we're baby faces, so sometimes we team together shtick from last week. And to me, it didn't work as well as it did last week. The finish came when Storm and Styles are arguing, and Jeff Hardy just tags himself in, hit the Twist of Fate on Kaz. Also, at a certain point in this match, Jeff Hardy hit the Twist of Fate on Roode and on Kaz, and they both, like, did... You remember how The Rock used to sell the Stone Cold Stunner by, like, doing a back... or doing a handspring. You know, like, bouncing back, doing a flip and a handspring to sell it. That's basically... They did a jump and handspring to sell the Twist of Fate. And it was just like, yeah, we're going to have fun selling this one. Or, you know, we're going to make Jeff Hardy look like Superman with the Twist of Fate tonight. But Hardy hit the Twist of Fate on Kaz to get the win. Fine way to win a match. You know, that's what I'll go with. It was a 15-minute and 14-second match. After the match, everyone left except for Hardy. The Aces and Eights ran out and beat him up until Storm made the save with a chair. Bobby Roode stood on the ramp and applauded Aces and Eights because he paid them to beat up Hardy. And, you know, it was kind of the whole it pays to be Roode thing coming back. And, you know, Bobby Roode paid them to beat up Jeff Hardy and soften him up for their match on Sunday. I didn't dislike that angle. But I'm still left just going, so Aces and Eights are motivated by what? Jeff Hardy is motivated by, you know, what? Who are these guys? Who are these guys? What guides a character should be their motivation? You know, that's what we see. That's what they act on. That's what tells us who they are. As a person, what tells you who I am is not what I say, but it's what I do and why I do it. Sometimes it is what I say. You know, I should take that back. Sometimes it is what I say. And if it matches up with what I do and why I do things. But TNA is missing that point in their characters. And because of that, they're developing one- and two-dimensional characters instead of fully formed three-dimensional characters that people can cheer for. And I've already talked about this too much. So I didn't like this episode of Impact for that reason. It's not necessarily that anything was the worst thing or that anything was super bad. It's that it was the perfect illustration of things that are wrong at the core of TNA. So let's get into the bonus portion of this audio, the Turning Point preview. And remember, Jason Powell will be covering the show live for you on Sunday night, and after that, for .NET members, he will have an exclusive audio review. Those are always fun to listen to. I know when I get up on Monday morning, normally after I've watched and written about the pay-per-view, I will listen to that, and I enjoy Jason's viewpoints on things. A lot of times we agree, a lot of times we don't, and it's always fun to see when we come out on that. So let's get into it. Knockouts Championship, Mickie James versus Tara. I see Tara winning this one just because they telegraphed that Velvet Sky's kind of going to come in and be involved in a Knockouts Championship feud, and I think they want to capitalize after what they think was bringing back a major star in Velvet Sky. So, see Tara winning this one due to interference from Jesse, and Mickie James kind of takes a backseat to Velvet Sky for a while. X Division Championship, Kenny King versus Rob Van Dam. As much as I'd love to see Kenny King win this match, and I would because Kenny King's an actual X Division wrestler and is a dude who can be enhanced, I'm going to go with Rob Van Dam. Just because I think TNA doesn't know what else to do with him. So they're going to keep the X Division title on him, not put him on TV all that often, use him for kind of throwaway TV matches and occasional brilliant things with Austin Aries. And sort of go by the wayside. So I'll pick Rob Van Dam to win that one. World Tag Team Championship match. Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan are challenging Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. And this one, I think Chavo and Hernandez win, I want to say. Although I could be wrong, because TNA may want to put some heat on Morgan and Ryan, and a way to do that is to make them the kind of undeserving heel tag team champions, although they're the barely the second best, you know, they're maybe the second best heel tag team in the company. Despite the fact that I would love to see Bad Influence come in and beat them, Bad Influence's Daniels and Kazarian come in and beat Chavo and Hernandez at a certain point. I'm going to go with Matt Morgan and Joey Ryan to win the tag titles here. Joey Ryan's first gold in TNA should be pretty cool for him as a person. Aces and Eights versus Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe, Garrett Bischoff, and Wes Briscoe. I already told you guys what I think is happening there. Bischoff and Briscoe are turning on Angle and Joe. It's going to be like, do you remember the invasion angle, the night when a WWF and WCW formed a team to take on the ECW invaders that had come in on Raw, and, you know, there was this big thing where now ECW's coming in, and it's gonna get crazy. And there were, like, two WWF guys in the ring, and all the rest of the dudes that came out were, like, former ECW guys or WCW guys, and they formed the alliance, the WCW-ECW alliance there. I think it's gonna be like that, where, like, Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle are attacked from behind by Bischoff and Briscoe, and they get their, you know, Aces and Eights leather chaps on and celebrate. It's a match that'll happen. that's the most I can say about it at this moment. Bully Ray versus Austin Aries in a why didn't Hulk Hogan want to make this match match? I said in my Pruitt's pause today that I would find it really interesting if Brooke Hogan went full on heel, turned on Bully Ray, turned on Hulk Hogan, and aligned herself with Austin Aries and just got super Stephanie McMahon-esque. And you know what? I'll predict that. I'll go with Austin Aries winning because Brooke Hogan hits Bully Ray in the bully balls, and, you know, this feud goes on with Brooke Hogan playing, like, the evil, curly-haired woman. I'm just assuming that she starts curling her hair more like Stephanie did. That was awesome. One final time, Christopher Daniels versus the phenomenal AJ Styles. I think the idea is that Styles, you know, we kind of know that the idea is that Styles is turning here eventually. So I think we're going to see Daniels win this match, maybe due to some interference from Kazarian, maybe just Daniels actually gets a clean win over AJ Styles, and that's kind of, you know, the capstone of their feud. Daniels beats Styles. It'll be good. There are no stipulations on this one. I don't know that Daniels and Styles can top themselves again. I didn't think they could going into the Last Man Standing match last year, and it was phenomenal. That match is awesome. Probably TNA's match of the year. I haven't sat down and looked at what else they had, but it's up there for TNA's match of the year. I'll pick Daniels to win this one just because Styles is turning into a bad guy soon, and that will help motivate him to do so. Motivation. And finally, Bobby Roode versus the charismatic enigma Jeffrey Nero Hardy. They love calling him that. Jeff Hardy. I'll pick Hardy to win, to beat Bobby Roode. I don't see a babyface contender coming down the pike. I don't actually even see a heel contender coming down the pike. So I think Hardy ends up beating Roode, keeps the belt, and they kind of keep... The weird thing about Hardy as champion right now is he feels like he's on the back burner. And it might just be something that has been happening for a while with Jeff Hardy being on the back burner, because it also happened with Austin Aries. Once the Aces and Eights story started happening, that was the main story on TNA. And right now, the main story is Hulk Hogan, Bully Ray. Aces and Eights are kind of involved with Hogan, too. He dislikes them strongly. Like, there's quite a few major stories happening. So I'm going to pick Hardy to win and continue to be kind of the guy that's there, but isn't really getting pushed much in TNA. Which is a bummer, because you think Jeff Hardy is your world champion. Shouldn't he be the centerpiece of your shows? And right now, the shows are being built around almost everything but Jeff Hardy. I'd hope that that'll change. Hardy's a fun act when he's the centerpiece. And he's a hard guy to make the centerpiece. But I think they're pushing him well enough right now. Like, as far as what they are doing with him, that you position that a little bit better, and you can make him the centerpiece. I've used the word centerpiece a lot. You'd think I was, like, making a Thanksgiving centerpiece as I do this, which I'm not, because Thanksgiving already happened, and I don't start making centerpieces till October, folks. I'm not one of those making my centerpieces a year in advance. Don't be that guy. Anyways, that's gonna wrap it up for this audio. Again, final resolution is Sunday. If you're not watching the show, follow along with the live coverage from Jason Powell. I know I will be, because I'll be watching the Packer game if I'm off work in time to do so. Yeah, follow along with the live coverage from Jason Powell. He's going to hook you up with that. Follow along. And then afterwards, because I know y'all want that .NET membership bad, go ahead, listen to that Final Resolution audio review from Jason Powell. Get you some of that and get you some of the other great member benefits that we offer. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you so much just for listening to the ProWrestling.net All Access podcast. Thank you, and, you know, if this is the last time I'm on the All Access side, have a Merry Christmas, have a Happy New Year, have all of those things that you should have. Thank you so much for listening, and, you know, have a great weekend, folks.